are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to CommBank's Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a senior economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by Kim Mundy, a senior economist in our international economics team. Kim, good to have you on.
Hi, Belinda. Thanks for having me again.
It is good to have a chat. Now, we've waited a bit of time for this chat about the US election, which was a deliberate strategy until we did see a bit more certainty. So it's now over 3 weeks since the US election, which is hard to believe. And it looks like former Vice President Joe Biden is now President-elect Joe Biden, and the transition is officially commencing as we speak. The current President Trump does continue to have some legal challenges in place. Mm-hmm. What is it looking like at the moment? And in particular, what we need to keep in mind is the outlook for the Congress.
Yeah, exactly. So we have now seen that transition of power is underway. President-elect Biden is being given access to what he needs to get ready to take over on the 20th of January, 2021. But it's not all about just who's president. It's also about the makeup of the government. And in the US, we call that the Congress, which is made up of two houses, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, we know what's happened with the House of Representatives. That's been maintained as a Democrat majority. But we're actually still waiting to see where the balance will fall for the Senate. There are two seats left that we're waiting for, both in Georgia, and they're going to run off elections on the 5th of January. So the Democrats actually have to win both of those seats if they want to tie the Senate. A tied Senate means that the president of the Senate can essentially break those tie votes, and in this case it would be Kamala Harris. But I guess one thing that people often forget is that the president themselves doesn't really have much power when it comes to direct government spending and taxing. It's the Congress, it's government that decides. And the president is just the one that vetoes or accepts the laws passed by Congress. So the makeup of Congress is going to really matter a lot. And if the Republicans have majority in the Senate, then that could mean that a lot of Biden's policies come up against a bit of pushback.
Now, that's obviously going to impact, I guess, the economic outlook and the size and the degree of policies that he does want to change, and we will talk about them shortly. I guess probably the best place to start with what President-elect Joe Biden will do, maybe differently to what President Trump is doing at the moment, is how he's going to deal with the coronavirus. And he's made that obviously a big policy platform through his election. How will he deal with COVID-19 compared to how President Trump has been dealing with it?
Yes. Well, we think COVID is really going to be his number one priority, but there are almost two distinct features to that. And on the one hand is getting the virus under control itself. Trump has taken a relatively laissez-faire approach to getting numbers down. And, I mean, we're seeing this just by the general numbers of new infections that are in the US at the moment. So daily infection rates are about five times higher than they were in the initial wave, and we're now in the third wave of infections in the US. President-elect Biden has already formed a 13-person coronavirus task force, so they're going to help him shape his approach to managing the crisis. But I guess one thing to note is that in the US, it's actually the state governments that have the authority to impose lockdowns, not the federal government. But we do think that Biden will be more sympathetic to statewide shutdowns than Trump has. If we think back to April, Trump was very keen on getting the economy back open. He wanted state governors to remove restrictions as soon as possible. We don't think we'll see the same sort of approach from Biden, but he will also be very conscious, as Trump was, of the economic cost that comes with these shutdowns. But as we've been talking for the last 6 months, it's that health economic balance, which is a pretty tricky one.
And I think one other point to make here is the US has had comparatively less fiscal stimulus compared to other countries, particularly here in Australia and other countries like New Zealand. What's the prospect for fiscal stimulus under the Biden presidency?
So Biden has said that he wants to see more fiscal stimulus. He has said that he supports a $2.2 trillion additional fiscal stimulus bill. Now, that's around 10% of annual US GDP, so it's pretty sizable. Number there. This act has already been passed by the House of Representatives, but it doesn't have Senate support. And again, that's what comes back to the issue around the makeup of Congress. So if we do have a split Congress, i.e. the Senate remains Republican in a Republican majority, we're probably actually looking at less fiscal support. If you look back, Republicans tend to be less supportive of fiscal stimulus when they're in opposition. So many analysts are thinking that a stimulus package closer to $500 billion to $1 trillion, which is around 2 to 5% of GDP, is more likely. And that's just going to be one of the first examples of how Biden will really struggle to get his own policies across the line if he doesn't have a unified government.
It does really sound like a lot of the outlook for policy will come down to those Senate races in Georgia. Turning our attention now to some of President-elect Biden's policies that he did campaign on. And the first I want to talk about is tax policy. It looks like he did really campaign on a shift in the tax mix. So looking at lifting taxes for higher income earners and lowering taxes for lower income earners. What could that do for the economy?
Yeah, so we have been closely watching what the Tax Policy Center has been, their sort of analysis for how Biden's tax policies can influence the economy. And it does suggest that it could slow economic growth. So they estimate that Biden's tax changes could lower annual US GDP by between 3.3 and 0.7% between the years of 2022 and 2030. But once again, split Congress can really complicate those plans. So it looks like Biden's proposal to lower taxes essentially for lowest middle income earners, for families with children, those are more likely to achieve Senate or Republican support. But we are likely to see Republican pushback against Biden's tax hike policies. And that just means that a lot of his other policies have been paid for by these tax hikes. So if they're not legislated, then that's just another hurdle that the Biden administration is going to have to figure out if they want to get some of their other policies through.
Probably where he will have more success at changing the landscape is on the foreign policy and trade and international relations point of view. It looks like he's going to take a very different approach to what the current President Trump has undertaken. How do you see that taking place?
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing because as president, he actually has more power when it comes to foreign policy than he does when it comes to domestic policy. So he will be able to shape his own path a bit more there. And we're expecting that he will move back to a more predictable approach like we've seen with previous US presidents, a bit more pro-trade and seek to sort of re-establish some of those ties with allies such as with Europe. But I guess one of the things that's really standing out is that we're not expecting Biden to significantly change the recent stance against China. So he's, you know, instead we might see him move towards a more multilateral approach in order to put pressure on China. But he's promised to use aggressive trade enforcement actions in order to defend against unfair practices from China, and in that case, you know, from any other country that's seeking to undercut American manufacturing. So there are some similarities between Biden and Trump when it comes to dealing with China, putting pressure on China, but it's just how he goes about that pressure will be a lot different, and it'll be a lot more like what we're used to seeing. And so from our point of view, what that means is we're probably likely to see a lot of the uncertainty that's shrouded global trade and especially global manufacturing in recent years will unwind, and that should support a pickup in global trade. I mean, US and global, for that matter, manufacturing activity was actually already declining well before the pandemic struck, and that was just in part because of the uncertainty caused by President Trump's unpredictability on the global stage. So when you remove that, we think it will ultimately be to the benefit of global trade volume.
And now, economists love infrastructure, mainly because it adds to the productivity growth in the long run for the economy and can lead to a pickup in potential economic growth as well, which is a good thing. How will Biden's policies on infrastructure changed?
So he's proposing to spend $1.3 trillion in infrastructure over a 10-year period, so roughly 6% of annual GDP. Now, infrastructure investment has been declining in the US for a long time. It's been heavily underinvested in, and it desperately needs some attention. So while as you said, infrastructure spending can boost economic activity, it can create jobs, it can, you know, improve productivity over the longer term, I think from our point of view, the risk is that because the spending has been spread over a 10-year period, it actually might limit any sort of short-term job creation and economic boost, which when you're in a recession and you've just had a global health pandemic would be beneficial. That's not to say it's not worth doing it and it won't have those longer-term benefits that we were talking about, just won't be as noticeable in the short term.
Now, what about climate change? That seemed to be a key pillar within his campaign as well, is that he does want to devote a lot more time, attention and money to dealing with climate change. What's likely to be the economic impact from that?
Yeah, and this is one of the key areas where I think Trump and Biden really are polarised. They are taking complete different approaches to climate change. So Biden has said that he will rejoin the Paris Accord on day one of entering the White House, so when he's inaugurated on the 20th of January next year. And part of that means that he will pledge to cut US emissions to net zero by 2050. In order to meet all those goals, he's earmarked $1.7 trillion to invest in what he's calling a clean energy revolution. And that actually includes ensuring that all US energy is 100% clean by 2035. So we had a look at the sort of recent data and the makeup of US energy and found that actually only about 15% of US energy comes from coal these days. It's been a declining trend. And on the flip side, natural gas has been rising lately, and that now actually accounts for around 40% of all energy in the US. So again, you know, we're going to see a lot of investment in clean. We will see a lot of investment in green technology, including electric cars. But one of the things we're just wary about, as I mentioned earlier, is how he might pay for all of this investment, because in his campaign he said that the tax hikes will be used to help pay for this, but if the Senate won't approve tax hikes, then that money has to come from somewhere else, and that means that the US federal debt, which is already very high, could swell even higher.
So I guess trying to wrap this all up, there's still a lot of uncertainty about what President-elect Biden will be able to do. Obviously, he has aims about the type of agenda he wants to run. It's all very dependent on the makeup of Congress. He may have more success internationally. So where does that leave the outlook for the global economy with the new Biden administration? Does it change it that much?
We do think it changes it, because on the international front, just that reduction in uncertainty around global trade will be really beneficial. And, you know, for small trading nations such as Australia, New Zealand and Canada, that's definitely going to help those economies. But actually, you know, even his domestic policies, no, we don't know how much of them might be passed, but on paper, those on their own can actually boost the US economy. We think they'll create jobs, increase productivity, and lift activity. We are actually talking about a lot of government spending here as well, not only the fiscal package, but the infrastructure, the green technology. It's going to be a lot of US government investment hitting the economy.
That's going to be a good thing when we're looking and talking about the recovery from COVID-19.
Exactly. If you look at where the US economy is now, that will only help to bring the US economy out of recession and to help offset the many headwinds that are still facing the US economy. And when the US is such a big economy globally, a healthy US economy is good for the rest of the world as well.
Kim, it's been great to get your insights on what's next for America. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Belinda.
Now, you can read Kim Mundy's report on What's Next for America, and that was published on combankresearch.com.au on the 20th of November, 2020.